Welcome to Flip Your Friday. I'm your host, Wynn Silberman. This is my co-host, Casey LeBlanc. We have a special guest today, Case, Dr. Brian Trainer. Thank you very much for visiting with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it. This is going to be really interesting. You know, health and wellness is such an interesting topic for me, for all of us, whether you want to optimize your health or whether you have a sick parent. The things that have gone through with the vaccine and some of the things that have been uplifted in the modernization of medicine have been very eye-opening to me. So I wanted to take a second and step back. I'm a client of his, actually, for optimization of health. But I do want to take a step back before I start asking you some questions. And I know you went to West Point. I know you've obviously a naturopath. I want to talk about that, too. But first, just stepping back, my father was a orthopedic surgeon and an MD. And I was trained by my father to only listen to MDs. If he was alive today and we went through the pandemic, I would lean on his advice, which was based on 40 years of medical school, right? Or 40 years prior to medical school. And I would rely on that advice. But what I learned through this vaccination and this whole pandemic was modern medicine has become so innovative that you can't just rely on an MD. Right. There has to be other roles that people play. Osteopaths, chiropractors. There's this litany of healthcare providers that, whereas before they weren't really given a lot of credibility, I tend to start giving credibility. So with that, I know I was going to read a little bit of your bio, but I kind of just want to jump into something. What exactly, how do you define yourself as a physician? What is a naturopath? Like, define that first, then we'll go from there.
Yeah, great question. I would be happy to share that. So I am a naturopathic doctor, licensed naturopathic doctor in California. Every state right now is slightly different. I can be called a naturopathic physician in Washington, where I first found out about naturopathic medicine, where I myself benefited from a naturopathic physician. And so it's still 4 years of schooling. I went to an undergrad program, was an army officer for a while, got sick myself, and we'll talk about that. But I started looking at different options of where to go to school, and I did get accepted to a few osteopathic programs. By the point I was applying to medical schools, I was pretty turned off by the conventional medical system.
Sure.
And thought, you know, MD bad, everything else
now,
maybe.
No, not to cut you off, but osteopath is a blend of Western medicine and Eastern medicine, right? To a certain extent?
That's the philosophy, absolutely. So okay. Dr. DOs, or doctors of osteopathic medicine, licensed in all 50 states, can do every residency opportunity that an MD can do now. So little known fact about, I think it's 9% of physicians will countrywide are DOs, about 25% in the military. So we have actually a lot of DOs in the military, which is great. It's not orthopedic. Orthopedic, osteopathic, very different. Osteopathic at its core is really the idea that the body is meant to heal itself, that if we give it the right nutrients and blood flow, specifically blood flow, they focus more on blood flow. Chiropractors focus more on nervous system supply. They're both relevant. There really shouldn't be an argument. It used to be back in around 1900, NDs, chiropractors, osteopaths were pretty much all the same, and same with MDs. It was after 1910, and we can talk about kind of what happened in medical education that changed kind of how each group got siloed and has been ever since fighting for their piece of the pie, which is unfortunately has, I would say, delayed optimal patient care because it's kind of like instead of it being who can help you, it's which degree could possibly help you.
And well, part of why we're doing this podcast is because I look at it like you are the CEO of your own health, and people don't take ownership and responsibility of that. And they have, you know, they go into a Kaiser system and it's a flip of the coin who they get, or they go see one doctor and it's like, well, that doctor studied for 8 or 12 years, whatever it was. And so they must know what they're doing. It just couldn't be further from the truth, in my opinion. And I think to your point of where the vaccine has taught us is that groupthink is not necessarily always right.
Right.
And whatever side of the, you know, the coin you fall into from the vaccination standpoint, we do know that there was a lot of forced groupthink, and then it became, you know, a whole thing. But what it did was it spotlighted the idea that, at least this is my opinion, and I would love to hear yours as to when you have a new medical phenomenon, it should be debated. It should be argued. There's just not enough data or evidence to for there to not be the argument from the other side, you know, debating that. Right. Where do you land on some of that stuff? I know it's a highly hyper topic, but
great question. Yeah. So the whole where most people kind of take this conversation is, if an MD was in the room potentially, and they were maybe against some of what I might suggest, or at least in theory, they probably, once we got talking, we'd probably realize we have, 90% of our philosophy is similar. Where I landed is evidence.
Stop touching your microphone.
Evidence-based. So this word evidence-based is this term that's been used to, this, it's not science-backed, evidence-based, follow the science, whatever term was used, both in the pandemic and previously to discredit other maybe ideas or ways of thinking. I would love to be fully evidence-based. There's no perfect placebo-controlled trial to say what is going to help win tomorrow. We can look at the data and we can tweak numbers and we can work on things, but it's going to be evidence informed. So I'm going to take the best research, the best clinical, knowledge that I have and all my mentors and the people that have taught me how to practice and what I'm hearing on podcasts, bring in whatever we can learn and hear and see, is it safe? Is it effective? Is it going to be effective for you personally? So I like to joke, I don't practice evidence-based medicine. I practice results-based medicine. Mm-hmm. You versus you, are you better off? And are you healthier? Are you created, longer to advance your health span, not just your lifespan. And so in the end, that's my number one question. And it's really also looking at, are there potential negatives, right? But if there's something that has low negatives, high potential, I'm almost always going to lean towards that and give people that option.
We were talking about this before we got started. And I think it's the idea of reactive medicine versus proactive medicine. Mm-hmm. And this transition that hopefully a lot of people are starting to catch on, because there's more, maybe more research, there's more trials, there's more things that are going on. It's certainly more easy, or it's a lot more readily available information, podcasts and research, yeah, and Twitter and so forth. What are some ideas, as I talk about, be the CEO of your own health, yeah, be the CEO of your life and your maybe the healthy life that you can live. Give us some ideas as to what people should be doing with that.
Good question. Yeah. Being the CEO of your own health. So the way it kind of worked for me was similar. I kind of just listened to what doctors said. I didn't have a medical background in the family necessarily, but grew up very healthy. My mom got diagnosed with breast cancer and she was 39 years old. And that was a wake-up call because she was running marathons. My mom was also an Army officer, an intel officer. She was, amazing. She still does CrossFit like twice a day.
You won a national championship, right, while you're in?
Yeah, I ended up racing triathlon. So I get a lot of kind of a fun little fact. We get all of our mitochondrial DNA from our mothers. Sperm doesn't have any mitochondrial DNA, whereas...
It definitely doesn't.
So, yeah.
The good thing is I have no idea what mitochondria is, so okay. Mine's probably elite, but yeah.
Just Google it later.
Can you just tell us what that is?
The joke basically is that, and it's true though, you get your energy from your mother, your energy ability. So, but interestingly, the egg that formed your mother was actually already around when your grandma was born. So super interesting. So the egg that ended
Don't
up making
let his head
my
explode.
Mom...
So, walk them through this slowly.
So my Irish granny, my grandparents are Irish immigrants. Her egg was made during the Great Depression, basically my mom's egg. So my mitochondrial DNA dates back to when her egg was first around. Whenever first, right? So women are born with their entire egg supply for their life.
Right.
So we could date back to 1930, wow. Mona Mulholland being born, somewhat predicts how my energy will be today. My ability to produce ATP at the cellular level,
which is interesting.
ATP is what, action, right? That's the energy part of the protein.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Another kind of fun fact about being the CEO: there's no specialty in medicine that focuses on mitochondria, on energy, right? We use this term energy and all these like energy medicines and all this.
Yeah.
But every style, every philosophy of medicine understands there's a flow of something through the body, whether it be electrons.
Frequency, even electronic frequency, right? Is that not?
Yeah, something everyone that is understands just accepted? That it's a thing. We just haven't pinned it down. So interesting. That's actually a gap I often fill, is because I could not, even if I was practicing true primary care, family medicine role, that if someone has a mitochondrial, other than a fully genetic, like they weren't born with enough mitochondria, right, their cells don't work right. If their mitochondria aren't working well, it's going to affect everything in the body, every function. And there's nobody focusing on that. So
I want to get back to, that was a great question, by the way.
Yes.
This is a really good question.
Most of them are.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But I want to take you back a little bit to responding to this question, because I think it's very important. And I want to liken it to this. That I have ulcerative colitis / Crohn's. I don't know. As a roommate every once in a while in Vegas, he's had to suffer through a lot of issues, right. And
And I apologize to a lot of people out there for that. But anyways, you know, what was fascinating to me is clinically, and I can tell you personally, and then I want you to share your story because it goes back to his question of how do you become a CEO of your health in this modern era. So I'm on very high-end medicine. I've walked the gamut on every possible thing to try to at least alleviate some of my ulcerative colitis and Crohn's. I've been introduced to peptides, the BP157 peptide. It's been obviously helping with me with my inflammation, whatever the hell's going on.
Very obvious. It's working. To some of us. Yeah.
It's working. But you know what? I wouldn't have even had my mind open enough to even consider how I can better my health without the perspective of you, which is not an MD, a gastroenterologist that I've been working with for a long time. That's an example of being
Just before you answer, how did you even get to this stage? Because I think a lot of people just end up with an HMO, go to see one person. That's what I'm trying to get to, is like opening up people's mind to do some research and to get to other alternative ideas.
I think number one is my anchor and my background in sports and athletes. I think that traditionally athletes are much more attuned to their bodies and they're always trying to get an edge. You're obviously, I don't want to say limited, but there's agencies obviously that control what you're allowed to do to your body as an athlete. Right. But if you're not regulated, if you're not competing, why not be able to utilize the best that medicine has to offer?
I think that's a great point. Would you probably say that too, right? Question everything, test things, do your research, ask more questions, go see difference of opinions. What are some ideas?
Tell us your story. Yeah. Tell us your stomach. Like what? Yeah. I mean, because you shared what I had.
Yeah. So I have ulcerative colitis also. And, you know, sometimes I say Crohn's because you're right. Yeah. In the beginning, it wasn't clear what was what. But one way I'd answer that is that to take control of your own health, I think is really important. Like to basically view, I would argue that we should probably view health insurance more like car insurance. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't expect your car insurance to pay for you if you never change your oil in your car, and you knew you were supposed to. You were told your oil check engine light came on, right? So one, we have to build those mechanisms in so people get those check engine lights in their own health, I would say. But we would expect your car insurance to cover catastrophic care, right? Something happens to you that you could not control. Now, we're not going to be able to control everything, but even just philosophically, even if you have great health insurance that does cover more than catastrophic care, can you view it, though, that this is not meant to keep me optimal? This is not meant to prevent illness. This is meant to be here if I absolutely need it. Instead, looking at how can we invest in your health, view it as an investment. I don't know many people. Now, I see a lot of people that are really health obsessed, right? So I do see that end of the spectrum. Sure. But even then, I've very rarely met people that, you know, I wish I invested less in my health. You know, I really wish I had put
health is wealth.
It really is. There's no way to put it. And there's and you know, I think we should always be wise stewards of the things we've been given and not be, you know, and that's what I try to help people do. Actually, more than anything, I help people prioritize what is important, right? Because there are probably 100 things that could help me and probably help you advance to get one step better in your health, right? But what is going to make the most impact, be the most affordable, be the most effective for you? That's really my job, to sit through all the new stuff, all the old stuff, all the stuff, and come up with a plan that's going to optimize not just your current sickness, but your long-term health.
Quick question, and then I want to keep going. But so physicians, they take the Hippocratic Oath, and the oath is, first and foremost, do no harm. Mm. I mean, that's a very number one oath that you have as a physician, as an MD. Do you guys take an oath like that? And is that your perspective? Because it's
a great question.
Yeah. I'd like just to know your perspective on that.
So the naturopathic, you know, standard of care, there's something called the therapeutic order. And it's something that we could, you know, share. I can share a link to.
Sure.
It helps really people understand, this is what, if I was being judged by my peers in a courtroom, for sure, this is what I'd be held to. Did I follow the naturopathic standard of care, the therapeutic order? The 6 naturopathic principles, the first one is, in Latin, prenum non nocere, first do no harm. The way that gets interpreted, so that's the first principle and the first part of the Hippocratic Oath. There's obviously more to it, what we're held to standards. The biggest thing there is, and I can share from my perspective, first do no harm could mean you need to take this statin because you could possibly have an issue with cardiovascular disease in the future based on a marker of LDL now. Therefore, first doing no harm is giving you this med. No discussion on, are there side effects? Could it be, you know, destroying the CoQ10 supply that fuels the mitochondria? Could there be muscle weakness? These are all known side effects. We're not just coming up with stuff. But first, do no harm to me would be maybe don't do that. Can we do 3 months of lifestyle change and then potentially...
The difference between physical therapy and surgery, for example.
Well, right. You may be taking an oath that says do no harm, but what you just described could potentially be doing harm, right?
Yeah, one example I had,
giving some prescription, because that's a lot of what typical Western medicine has been is, come see me. No matter what you say, we're going to have a small conversation. We're not going to do any type of blood work, or you're going to write a prescription and move on.
And they're limited by managed care. They can't even practice medicine the way they want to anyways, if you really want
to. We're generalizing to a bit.
Sorry. And I am too.
That's easy for us to say. We don't have a license or anything.
I have to be protect. Supportive. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but this is all hyperbole until you talk. So
it's the idea that, first doing no harm should really be informed consent is really what it comes down
to.
Got it. Even if the answer is we don't know. Yeah, I appreciate at least when a medical doctor, and I refer to a specialist or someone sees their primary when I'm out of network for them, that at least they say we don't know. Although I think the worst thing that could be communicated is it won't work. What if that person, I've seen all sorts of diet, nutrition things work for patients when I look objectively at their data before and after. Things that I probably wouldn't have necessarily recommended, but part of it was that they believed they were helping their health.
That's an interesting point.
And they stuck with it and they did it. And you know what? There's something to that, and there's a lot to that actually.
Let's just take somebody who's on the way beginning side of this journey of maybe progressive healthcare from the standpoint of this could be maybe the first podcast that they've been hearing something like, oh wow, I've never really thought about healthcare progressively. Yeah. It's more of like, I don't feel good, I got to go to the doctor type of thing, or I broke my leg or something like that. But if someone is just starting off on the journey and they're coming to see you, what are some of the first preliminary questions that you're going to ask? They're going to fill out a chart. And what's the conversation like?
Right. Yeah. Early on, it really is their goals. The VA actually talks about their whole health, veterans health. As a veteran, the whole idea is that, basically, it's not what's the matter with you, it's what matters to you. And it's a nice slogan, I wish I had thought of it. But, it really is a simple way of changing that conversation of, this, what are your symptoms? Okay, that matter. I care what your symptoms are, and I use that word actually more broadly than even conventional medicine usually does. A symptom could be, I feel a little less sharp than I did last year. I've started noticing my skin doesn't look as good. That objectively doesn't really matter to your primary care. But to me, it does. If I care about your health, your level of hydration might affect the way your skin looks. How clear your eyes are, there could be a sign of jaundice. Like the art of physical exam has actually gone out the window. If you looked at some older, really good physicians, MDs.
The art of medicine.
Yeah. Yeah. So emergency doctor.
Well, is that because people are doing a lot through electronic Zoom? And so it's not as easy.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right, because there's a lot of healthcare that's going on that's been done electronically.
Telemedicine, yeah.
It's hard to it's pixelated. Maybe they're not even paying any attention to the Zoom. Maybe people aren't even on the video.
A good faith examination has changed.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, a lot. And so I think there's a lot that you can see just by the way someone interacts. I think I love when I get to see, let's say, a couple and get to meet the husband and the wife or whatever, because I start seeing interrelational dynamics that could stress. I had a patient today that was, on a ski trip, and you think they wouldn't be stressed, but they said they were less stressed than their average life, but they were clearly stressed. They were clearly stressed. They're dealing with a lot of different stressors with their work and family, and the way that affects their health. And I can pick that up in a visit. I did objectively ask them to rate their stress also, and they did rate it 9.9 out of 10. Wow. So thankfully they were aware, but I could have picked that up without them giving me.
Do you see
number.
That a lot with patients where you? Are picking something up, but they're not admitting to it, so you have to diagnose something that maybe that they're not acutely aware of?
Maybe not self-aware in the beginning. And okay. I think so that's why, I usually when I sit down with a blood work panel, I don't do a ton of naturopathic like stool analysis and heavy metal testing. There's a lot of cool things you can learn. Usually those aren't necessary to start this journey, like you're asking. So I like to do the panel that we ran, for example,
pretty extensive blood work.
It's still pretty extensive, but it's four tubes. We're not taking, half a pint of blood.
I almost fainted anyway.
I do that four times.
I can't watch them put the needle in my arm. I have that. What do you call that?
No one cares.
Pretty basic panel can be done. Can be done pretty easily. Vasovagal.
Yeah, vasovagal. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, doctor.
You can get pretty good data, and some insurances will cover certain things, but at a minimum, you should know what's going on in your body.
Yeah.
And,
and blood work is probably the easiest way to start.
Right? It's probably the easiest way to start that a lot of insurance companies will at least give you the basics. Now, I do like, fasting insulin is actually a great marker. Paul Saladino, Carnivore MD, you guys should get him on the show sometime. But he lives in Costa Rica now. But he was functional medicine training. I love learning from people that they call themselves astronaut. Well, he called himself an astronaut. I call myself an astronaut in some ways too. Like, meaning I might go to the moon. Like, do you need to bathe in hydrogen water for the next year and see if your skin gets better? Like, I don't know. Like, somebody might do that, right? Someone might turn this room, like turn their bedroom into a hyperbaric chamber, right? Yeah. Costs, I don't know how many million to do that. Yeah. Are we going to see telomere length differences? Are we going to see biologic age reversal? Are we going to see less joint pain? I don't know, but should Tom Brady do it or someone else? Potentially, and we can learn from
that. If you're in an ambulance, here's how I see it empirically. The first thing that you do from a hyperbaric standpoint, and it's oxygen. Oxygen heals is the basic concept for hyperbaric medicine. The first thing you do if you're going in an ambulance, they put the oxygen mask on there. It's almost implicit.
We're talking about the journey of
health. I'm just saying.
But what he's saying is like not – everything can be for everyone.
Absolutely.
Right? And there has to be certain levels. So we're talking at the beginner stage, just getting a pretty extensive blood panel that's covered.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mostly amongst.
Yeah.
But even still, like even just getting one panel every, X amount of years is not going to give you enough, right?
Like, no, it should be year to year. And I think the other things
if not more.
The things I ask a patient is like, I like objective markers, like how many hours of sleep, but I care, like, are you waking up feeling refreshed?
Yeah.
For men in their 40s and above, are you waking up with erections more often than not? That's actually 10 years before any cardiovascular disease. Generally, we'll see a decrease in morning erections. Like, there's some really interesting self-awareness things that, I had a 76-year-old patient today. He's had multiple heart surgeries, things like that. And I did get to that part of the exam. When I was talking to him, I just said, hey, like, how is erectile function? And he, laughed. Like, he hasn't had an erection. And he's on 8 different meds. So is it the meds? Is it his heart condition? Is it blood flow? Like, there's a lot of factors. Now I got to peel back all those, and that's not his goal. So I'm not going to say, but it's a sign, could we have figured that out in his 50s, prevented 4 heart surgeries, multiple, he can barely walk now from his last, he has an aortic aneurysm. Like,
Jesus.
Okay. And the reason I say that is that, I do a lot with hormones, right? I do a lot with testosterone because especially for men, there are molecules that we know signal healing in the body. There's basic physiology, we know there's certain things that signal to break down things in your body, and there's certain things that tell your body to build things up. And so I look at, is your body able to heal itself? Do you have the innate ability? We're all born with it. We are all born with it, and we probably all have somewhat differing degrees. Probably elite athletes have a better ability to recover than most. Not necessarily train at a higher level. Some do, obviously.
Might be the mental side.
The mental side is a big part, but your ability to recover is key for health. And so we really think of less about homeostasis. That's the word that we always use. Oh, I'm in balance. It's actually homeodynamics. How far can you be stretched and how quickly can you return to optimal? And that's because every cell in our body is doing that, right? It's being stretched, it's being pushed, and that's returning. So I ask, how long does it take you to recover from a workout? Is it taking longer? So I like to do you versus you because that's objective. Even if there's not a marker that says, if that same workout used to take you one day to recover, you do it again, 48 hours. Now it takes you a week. That's objective. I don't care I do care what your hormones say behind that and what your levels say, but I care more about those objective markers that you versus you is going to benefit you.
In addition to that, I'm always not wanting to look at the medium or the median, but looking at the optimal and looking at the optimal specific to me, right? Yes. So my height, my weight, my skill set, how I would view my energy level. So all of those different things and then tweaking all of them. So now we're probably starting to get from a beginner level into a more advanced level. And what are some of those things? So you've kind of walked us through a little bit on the beginning stage. Now let's take somebody that has started the journey, is maybe a couple years in. They're like, I just want to keep continuing to, see where this can go, right? Maybe they have done the blood work, but you would say, what are some of those questions? Someone who probably understands the basics.
Yeah, I do think the term that I've usually kind of looked at, get into the body what it uniquely needs and get out of it what it uniquely doesn't need. And some of that is personally determined. I think a few podcasts recently, like Joe Rogan had Gary Brecka on, super interesting, 10X Health. That's very similar to how I think, actually. he promotes everyone getting an epigenetic test to see. I can learn a lot from basic blood work generally and an intake on what your epigenetics probably say.
What would an epigenetic test, what would that entail? How do you take it, and then what does it spit out?
Most it's like a salivary test, so you can spit into a tube basically, or cheek swab. They're a few hundred dollars usually. There is a way you can take like 23andMe data and run it through other.
It's basically looking for genes, subsets of genes.
Yeah, subsets of genes. So those are MTHFR is kind of the biggest one that will affect fertility. It affects your methylation pathways.
MTHFR.
It's called the you guys are saying I don't swear, so
that's right.
The mother. Yeah. Gene. So yeah. I don't guess we're on this podcast, but anyway, MTHFR. And then there's about eight other markers of methylation. Generally you'll have a slightly increased mean corpuscular volume on your regular CBC. That could tell me if that's even an issue for you. But anyway, methylated bees are often low in patients that, don't eat enough good animal products, which I say good in the sense that we're all being challenged with that just with our food supply. Yeah. But, so methylation's big. There's one called COMT, but you can answer a lot of these questions. Like, can you drink coffee and fall asleep, right? Are you a slow metabolizer or are you a fast metabolizer? Coffee's not the first perfect example, but like I have a slow COMT gene. I detox caffeine slower than the average person. And so I have roommates, in the army that could drink caffeine and fall asleep, right? I can't. It won't. Even if I can, if I track my sleep with a Oura ring and that's what I like, the biometrics. I guess to answer that median question, the next thing is, are you tracking your sleep? Are you tracking your heart rate variability is probably the simplest marker to get. Like most watches give you your readiness score.
Yeah, I track all of it. Yeah.
And you could test that and you could say, okay, when I get a readiness score above 80, let's just say, I feel good. You might feel fine at 70. So you know what? For what you're demanding of your body and your mind, you might need 70 or above, and that's your baseline. But you know what? Could you do something to take it from 70 to 75 this year, potentially? Could you drink less alcohol potentially? Whatever the case may be, could you get 30 more minutes of sleep? Could there be a supplement before bed that personally for you would actually raise that consistently? Right. And because I can tell you what the data would say and suggest maybe five options, and I'll probably choose one if that's what you want me to do as your provider. But generally, I like to give them menu of options because I view people as they're pretty intelligent and that you're going to live with your body. Like even people I work with often, I might see them once a month, right? I'm not holding their hand. I'm not their trainer. I'm not their spouse. I'm not their roommate. But so one, get those people involved in your health. Have accountability groups is a great option. Like I know, simple things like watches, you can have your family or friends on there. See how many.
Circle.
Kind of fun. I like to go a little further than that with goals, though. I like to build in definitely rewards, but also negatives. One of my friends, him and his wife did this. How political do we get?
Please.
Someone.
I thought there was going to be like a sex.
Yeah. Let me know.
No, this was just a fun one. There was, height of pandemic, everything going on, lockdowns. And somebody, their wife was trying to make this change and this wasn't helping them. And their husband's like a success coach, seven. He basically, they agreed.
Sounds toxic.
They both sent goals. And, the way he explained it. So, it wasn't just the reward. I think, we're pretty good at that. When I do this, I'll do this. But some people are more motivated by the opposite. So yeah. They
masochistic, you're saying?
They set a goal. Like if you don't do these things that are on your health to-do list or on your goal sheet, you have to write like a letter of support to Governor Newsom and you have to donate to his campaign.
I like that.
Or something.
I like that a lot. So
what
like
can we build in? That's a little bit extreme, right? Yeah. But for it could be something a lot simpler than that.
So
right?
That's interesting.
That is like really that. Interesting. I want to get into a little bit with peptides and testosterone and hormones. I mean, you specialize.
That is more of the advanced, right? Or where you're moving into.
Yeah, if we don't mind getting to the next level. Because Ozempic, for example. First, I guess let me back up. If you don't mind going to, let's say, third level.
Yeah.
I understand Ozempic, for example, which is obviously in the media a lot, to be able to cut weight. Is a peptide. Yes. I understand that as a peptide. Would you just, for people who don't understand where this is going and where medicine is going, would you be first able to just kind of help us define what a peptide is and then maybe talk about what Ozempic does and then maybe we'll start going into what peptides are doing and where that's going.
Right. Okay. So I like that. I know I keep referring to, I'm not referring to Joe Rogan. People should listen to this podcast, but I actually don't listen to Rogan much until maybe 2, 3, 4 patients in a row bring up a health related one. Cause right. He's got a lot of good content, but he has some good health content. What I would say, yeah, so the basic one is like Andrew Huberman Labs, get outside, ground every day, sunlight. There's things that are free that you can do, like basic, even without any data. The next step would be getting that objective data, some basic blood work, maybe more advanced hormone testing, and then also starting to track your own biometrics and seeing you versus you over time. So that's kind of the middle. The next step is really, okay, how do I go from I'm functioning, I'm okay, but you know, I got a little bit of joint pain. I got this old injury. Maybe you should. That's when I would say see a functional medicine doctor, see a naturopathic doctor, see if you can get it covered by insurance. If not, don't wait. You know, like to see me through my practice, Optimize You, that I contract at. It's $179 to do a full blood panel and spend an hour with me. Most NDs are at least double that, and I love that. Just one of my missions in life was to make this more affordable. Used to work in the insurance model, and glad I got to do that to start my career where, you know, patients, I wasn't...
Understand the landscape.
Yeah, it could be, you know, people would pay a $5 copay or less sometimes and get to really pick my brain. I had to do what was right for them, and hope insurance did, you know, covered what it could. And if not, I got to learn basically what was somewhat covered in the system. So peptide therapy, and I got into this mainly for my own health, right? I was an All-American triathlete at West Point, started my Army career. 2 days later, I was hit by a car, fractured my femur. About a few months before that, I had a major head injury that I almost didn't commission and start my career from. Interestingly, you wouldn't think a car accident or a cycling accident and a head injury would necessarily be related, but a few months later, I was pooping out blood, had ulcerative colitis symptoms right away. Bunch of other factors in there, about 12 vaccines I'd already gotten when I was in college. They lost my records. I had to get them again at this Army base while I had a fractured
femur. You had to get the vaccines again?
Yeah, they just lined me up, and I didn't think much of it because I'd always just trusted the conventional system.
Right.
Again, who knows, but within a week, I was pooping out blood. Never had gut issues in my life. So the way that now makes sense from my understanding is the way our nervous system and our gut are connected, right? The way our second brain, our gut and our brain have a unique connection. We often say if you have a head injury and then a second head injury, especially within a month, even if it's a low level one after a major one, we start seeing blood brain barrier integrity issues, which is leaky brain basically. Right. And now there's pretty good understanding around that in the football community.
Yeah.
And so leaky gut and leaky brain go hand in hand. You really can't, it's hard to have one without the other, whether it starts more in the brain or the gut. And so we don't understand all the mechanisms. We think it's cranial nerve number 10, vagus nerve probably controls a lot of it. Parasympathetic nervous system. Anyway, so I went from perfectly healthy, winning races, to laying in a hospital bed broken. And then all the gut issues. I had a doctor, kind of to relate to your point, say there's no known cause, and this is summarized, but no known cause, no known cure, and there's really nothing you can do. And to go from, there was always something I could do for my health. I could always be one step better. I could be,
as an athlete,
shave 10 seconds off my half Ironman time, which, you know, over 4 hours, you wouldn't think is relevant, but you tell me I could improve 10 seconds. I would do
absolutely.
It, you know? So if I can get out of transition, whatever, like do all those, like, especially as a runner and on the track, I mean, that was objectively, could I run 3 seconds faster in the mile would be a major win, you know? So I was looking for those little, that still sounds, you know, like more time than a sprinter necessarily, but, you know, those little improvements could mean a lot of stuff. So that's how my brain was wired, to then be told there was nothing I could do to stop having 30 bloody bowel movements a day other than take this medication.
30.
Yeah, I was pretty sick. Yeah. So I was about, it's funny.
I've been there.
I'm still pretty lean, but I was about 25 pounds lighter than this, about 120 pounds soaking wet. And people, my runner friends were like, you look great. You must be in shape. You must be training.
No, I'm like, I feel like shit.
No, I actually haven't slept
in
a month.
Are you still in the hospital at this point, or did they just send you home with medication?
Multiple. So I went to the hospital 9 different times. Usually it was that I needed either a blood transfusion because I had lost so much blood. The first time I didn't realize how low I was.
Couldn't you get honorably discharged from ulcerative colitis?
So I did, but I tried to hide it. I really wanted to stay in. I loved what I did. I mean, the military was my 3.5 years in was some of the best times I've had, you know, I was born in upstate New York, but it was close enough on 9/11. I was in fifth grade and I was young. So, but it meant a lot. You know, I understood what happened enough it did change my worldview and my life kind
of. Yeah. Well, like, a lot of people don't want honorable discharge when they want to
continue
on the
journey. Well, no, I'm just saying that's how severe it is.
Don't listen to a lot of what he says. Yeah. A lot of it is nonsense. The audience, so
it's severe enough to get honorably discharged. Yeah. It's severe enough. That's all I was saying.
He's just looking for a free paycheck. He's actually part of the problem in California. Don't get me started.
Well, that's one reason I do what I do now. I mean, I treat a majority. If I could only treat military veterans, I probably would just based on that. I do think that's my calling, is to help, you know, others, understand, you know, before they get to the point where I was, where I was facing, you know, second time I moved here to California, went into a GI doctor, planned to just be here for 6 months to get Entyvio, actually. They wouldn't give it to me up in Washington through the military. So I moved down here. Actually, I was on a temporary retirement. It was very odd. 3 years into my career, being told.
So you're only 3 years in.
Yeah.
And this happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's immediately after they lose your records. And I'm just trying to understand. The story is pretty wild.
It happened really quickly.
You get seven or another 12 vaccines all, and then.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went from, it was May 2013, May 2013, graduated from West Point, 28th was hit by a car, fractured my femur.
Okay.
That was a cycling accident, but it was kind of cool. It motivated me. Again, I saw a functional neurologist. I saw a bunch of physical therapists.
You're learning about your health.
Yeah. It was actually a really fun. It was like, cause there's a measurable thing. I wish I knew about peptides back then. This injury should take 3 months. I wanted to try out to become an engineer diver and blow things up underwater, whatever I thought.
Yeah.
That was, I'd have been tentatively selected, like I had selected my career path in the Army to do that job, and there was a tryout in October. So I was like, I'm going to be better. I'm going to be not only better, but I'm going to be able to train by August. And I actually did. I went through, I had like electrodes hooked to me, and I was learning to walk before I was even better, where like should have been. So that was my first like, and I was a kinesiology undergrad, so I was already into human performance, the limits of what this body, this amazing machine we've been, you know, given can do. And see the limits. So I already knew that, so those were all like achievable. Like I could recover from this ulcerative colitis. To be told there's no known cause. Again, did they say directly there's nothing you can do? That's what it felt like when I left the room. I'm more of a feeler, but I do remember there's a colonel told me you can't fight this. You won't beat this. You need to get medically discharged. And I really fought it. Like I would love to still be in uniform. And I actually now see that, hey, I can do more from this side. I treat a lot of guys that are active duty and, you know, obviously that are veterans too, but I want to go as far upstream as possible. I would love to get some
this
more
country
of
this stronger.
Personal, well, I mean, right now they're recruiting. I mean, this is, if you want to talk about a national crisis, we literally do not have enough healthy young people, healthy men to defend our country. We don't. There's not, I mean, the retention rates are terrible.
We probably could have stopped at healthy men.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, just in general. No, we've got that's a
socially,
pandemic.
Physically.
The pandemic was not about COVID, but that's a whole other story. So I want you to finish. Now on the path of, okay, now I'm going to have to do something on my own.
Yeah. And with no intentions of ever being in healthcare. I thought maybe physical therapy to work with athletes. Yeah. My sister's a PT. So I was an engineer, combat engineer. So that was my job, was to lead engineer soldiers into battle, do route clearance, find explosives and help, you know, dismantle them properly. It was kind of what I thought I was doing. I got motivated when an officer at West Point convinced me that there was an underwater way of doing that. And you're a triathlete and you're good in the water. You should go do this. So about three officers a year get selected for that. 3 to 4. And some of my best friends, actually one of them texted me today about his health. Cause I went back to my 10-year reunion to West Point. Everyone, 5 years ago, this stuff, I actually went on a forum and talked a little bit about what I do as a naturopath quack doctor. Yeah. I got attacked. I was in DC, like, and I was just seeing who else was in the area to lobby for integrative medicine. I got attacked. Fast forward 5 years, everyone wants my business card, wants to know what we're doing.
Well, peptides. I mean,
it's a lot more than just peptides.
And they saw my journey, right? Yeah. I was still sick even 5, 6, 7 years ago when I was dealing with this, but, so the next 4 years, really, after I started dealing with the gut issues, were conventional care. I was on prednisone. I was on high doses for years. I was which is a catabolic agent. So again, is my body able to heal or is it not?
It's basically a steroid, right?
Yeah, so it's a corticosteroid. It's the opposite of a good anabolic steroid. Yeah. It's actually the exact opposite. It's funny that they called the same thing.
Atrophies, right?
Yeah.
So it breaks down your body, raises blood glucose, but I had actually lost bone density. I was 25 years old, had been an athlete my whole life. I was told you have osteopenia, you'll have osteoporosis if we don't get you off this corticosteroid, which was the only thing that would stop me from bleeding. So I'd go in and get a big dose of Solumedrol IV corticosteroids. It'd be enough to, one, my face would get all puffy.
Yeah, moon face.
Yeah,
right?
Moon face.
Yeah.
So I'd get on it. It would put out the fire, right? They saved my life. And that's conventional medicine's job. They helped me. I would leave and I'd get put on a taper. I'd be on 40 milligrams prednisone. I'd get down to about 20 and then I'd start having, for me, it was the bloody stools were a big part, but really it was the urgency. I couldn't walk across the street, you know, without going to the bathroom. And that's actually still the only symptom. I still have some urgency occasionally. But it's very rare and it's been pretty incredible. I'm off all meds, off all the none of the biologics really helped me that much. Humira, Remicade, Entyvio. I was on methotrexate, 6 MPs. So the next 4 years after where we were, at in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and then Fort Lewis, Washington, were kind of healing. And I actually,
when you say healing though, what does that actually mean?
So it wasn't
you
healing
had,
in the beginning.
You have to get rid of all like conventional medicine.
Right.
And so you, and do you see someone and then, or do you just do it on your own after the research that you've done?
Yeah. So in that journey, I kind of mixed in where people kind of gave me feedback of saying, you won't beat this.
Okay.
There's no, what I knew was that there was nothing that I was trying to kill off in my body. So I knew, like, understood there wasn't a bacteria, there wasn't a
cancer,
there was a condition. And that's what it's been really helped me and help others. Like, if it's a, it's not a disease. First of all, the word disease didn't even exist till 100 years ago. It was disc-ease, a lack of ease in some aspect of your health. But for me, there wasn't, it was my own cells. I really had, I had a hard time wrapping my mind around that my body is attacking itself. And there,
autoimmune.
Yep, that's what the autoimmune term would mean. Most people now call ulcerative colitis an immune-mediated condition, meaning there isn't an antibody to attack. Like, you're not, your body's not creating immune cells to attack my colon, but it's creating an way too much of inflammation to, which
it's
is
signaling,
causing.
It's basically signaling your body to just get rid of everything.
Yeah, it's attacking everything. Yeah. So basically, ulcerative colitis, fully damaged gut, like, and so the lining of the actual intestines, most people don't think about it. The epithelial layer of the gut is only one cell thick. So when we talk about leaky gut, it's that epithelial layer. Now, we have cells right behind that that are recovering, replenishing that first layer, but it's only one cell thick. Everything else on top, the mucin layer, the probiotics, all that, these are all built on one cell of our own. So the only thing dividing our own immune system, 70% of our immune system sits behind our gut, and the external environment is one epithelial layer. So that's where we talk about leaky gut. If it's at all,
this is just this is kind of a side note, but because we're talking so heavily and intense on it, is the gut one of the most like underrated health tools,
misunderstood,
like, or misunderstood, or like it doesn't feel like it gets as much attention as it, maybe how important it is.
They can't afford for it to be,
or how warning signs. Yeah, because it's either you're severely sick, like ulcerative colitis, and I actually say honestly, it's easier for me to treat ulcerative colitis than it is like functional, you know, IBS. So IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. And, you know, it's funny, like people in the IBD world, we tend to like get a little bit like, no, I have a thing that is like, it's a diagnosis. And not that I'm proud of it, but that's like, it is actually easier to put an X on the map and say, this is what's wrong.
Well, if you label it, you can at least control it in a sense. You have some sense of control over it.
Yeah. So functional, a lot of functional gut issues though, when I say that, meaning if we actually did a scope and looked at your, let's say, large intestine.
He just got his scope done.
Last Wednesday.
Yeah. You had a really good asshole, right? Is that right?
Well, I've been an asshole my whole life. It's a different experience. Did you know, by the way, we were just joking about this. I was awake. I think I'm the only.
I was wondering. I was going to ask you that.
Yeah. I was the only person who, I've asked 100 people and
you
they're like.
You don't do that.
You're awake?
Annie liked it. It was really.
Did they give you the option or did you?
I would have taken the option to sleep, but then I'm like, hey, when am I supposed to fall asleep? They're like, we're already in.
It just says how different we are. I have a mandatory order for anesthesia because
it was
gave
my
me...
first time. You're like 75 years old. You've done this 80 times. He's like a regular. Yeah. He goes like optional on Saturdays.
Yeah,
he's like, I'm bored.
You can learn to like it.
Yeah, you can learn to like it.
I've had 8 or 9. I forget. So yeah.
Have you really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was asleep for all them.
Well, when you're sick, I mean, when you're actually, you know, they're like, hey, what's wrong with you? Let's look
cute,
again.
It was a cute nurse.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
I was cute too.
How old was he?
Was that your first one? Or?
That was my first one, okay. And hopefully my last for a long time. Yeah, this is just a really uncomfortable situation.
How did the prep go? I'm just curious. Like,
that's what we were talking about.
There's got to be a different topic that we can.
Okay.
His prep was great. His colon must have been clean, but he didn't drink nearly as much as I've had to, or some other people in the audience here have had to.
It wasn't that bad. It was just
32 like ounces of fluid.
16 ounce for at 5 p.m. the night before, and then another 16 ounces the morning of.
Wow.
Yeah, unheard of.
Interesting. Yeah, we used to have to do a gallon of Go Lightly.
That's what I've heard.
I know.
It's funny
I was warning him about this. He goes, it's not that bad. I'm like, what?
When you get to this age, you start to have the weirdest conversations with like friends and other people. You're like, hey, so what'd you do last week? Yeah. So anyway, okay. So we're
sorry. I really want to get peptides.
I want to get to the cure here.
Yeah. So I did get medically discharged. I did leave the military, not necessarily on my own terms, but I did realize like it was tough to heal, right? And part of it was my own, like, mindset that I, you know, I was an athlete. I thought I had to push harder. I actually was so lack of in tune with my body that I was still trying to, I was on the Army 10 miler team for my base. Like I was training still. And it took like actually a really good MD, Doc Haight. He was used to be the high performance coach at Colorado Springs at the Olympic Training Center. He was with First Group, the Special Forces group. And I was doing like this physiology test and pretty silly. Like looking back, I'm like, I have ulcerative colitis. I was pooping out blood 30 times a day. He put a heart rate monitor on me and I was just sitting here like this, getting ready to do like a force plate treadmill, some cool test, you know? And he's like, and they're like, yeah, your heart rate's like 130 right now. Are you okay? Do you have a ton of caffeine? I used to not drink caffeine. So I was like, nope. And they're like, anything else? I'm like, well, I've been like pooping out blood, but it's okay.
Yeah.
And like, thankfully they, like the physiologist stopped what they were doing. They went and got the doctor and he was like, hey man, like that's not normal. You should go to the, you know, see the doctor. And I was like, well, I have ulcerative colitis, but he's like, no, I'm actually going to bring you to the ER. So that was my first inpatient hospitalization. Up to that point, I kind of worked through the outpatient. You know, prednisone would work a little bit enough that I had some doctors that would prescribe it for me.
This is the whole point.
Yeah.
This is the whole point. You were told one thing and then you kind of do it. Then you have to figure out how to live prednisone. With it. Right. And it took, how long was it from the time you had the, from the accident to the vaccine, to the time that you started to do some additional proactive outside of conventional medicine?
Was it 4 years? No, it was probably about 18 months. It was pretty short. Okay. Thankfully it was a short timeline.
That's not that short.
Well, I know, but a lot of people, like the UC starts as like, you know, a little bit of blood and then it's a lot. And then mine, thankfully, was went from perfectly healthy to
awful
20, 30 bowel movements. So I'm actually blessed in a lot of ways because it wasn't something like I couldn't hide it. I literally, I think
couldn't
I
go out.
Yeah, I couldn't. And I had some pretty embarrassing moments along the way. I didn't date for 4 or 5 years and really grateful. Just got married this past year.
Hey, so congratulations.
Thank you. So for me, it was actually Doc Haight. And then someone in that clinic actually, he had a broken leg. I still don't know who he is to this day. I'd love to find him. He's a Green Beret. And he just heard what was going on with me. He's like, hey, I heard you have ulcerative colitis. I don't really know that much about it, but I listened to this podcast and you know, it's 10 years ago now and podcasts were just kind of, especially health. They weren't, there's a ton now. Right. But Bulletproof Radio, Dave Asprey, he's like this guy, you know, he has podcast
coffee. Yeah.
He has, so he got into it mostly because he had a few health conditions, mainly Hashimoto's and autoimmune thyroid condition. So back then, especially Bulletproof was a lot more about health. I mean, he's still, I like Dave Asprey. I've gone to the Bulletproof conference, you know, he's just done more in like the way farther optimization now.
He's
like,
even changed his coffee now, right?
Yeah,
now
he's Danger Coffee. He's technically sold it. But anyway, so I never heard of any of this stuff. But his podcast, you know, would have Peter Attia. It had Mark Hyman, Functional Medicine. So I started learning about these new things. And I was like, wow, there's so much out there. And had no idea because none of the doctors I had talked to had mentioned that there was any other options. That they told me nutrition didn't matter. I mean, in fact, when, during my hospitalizations, they'd give me Ensure, you know, and there's Ensure, you know, it has like high fructose corn syrup is the first ingredient, which even back then wasn't understood to be toxic. And then there's the, it's called a carrageenan or carina, which has only been proven to actually exacerbate ulcerative colitis. Or
so you actually changed your philosophy based off of a podcast.
So it started planting seeds.
Open your mind.
So it started opening my mind enough that I was like, it started asking questions.
Were you asking questions to yourself and then go do research or to somebody who is a naturopath?
No, I still hadn't met any naturopathic doctors. Okay. What happened, I actually met a really good DO. So in the military, he actually wasn't in uniform. He was a contractor. They created a, what was the name of it? The sixth floor of Madigan Army Medical Center. They created like an integrative medicine wing of like the third largest military hospital in the country. There's Walter Reed, San Antonio, and then Madigan. He was like a DO that did integrative, like he did acupuncture, he did all this stuff. And I walked in to this guy's office because I wanted to get acupuncture. Someone, my PA in my unit heard everything I was going through, like, hey, you can get acupuncture now at the, I was like, okay, that might help. I don't know. I'm open to anything. And he, I walked in, this Dr. Grinchbun, he, on his desk, he had Bulletproof Coffee. And I had just started listening to this stuff, you know, 6 months in, I'm starting to try these things. And Bulletproof Coffee was kind of my gateway into all this. It was the first thing that made no sense based on what I understood about nutrition, carbo loading as a triathlete. I was at a really low fat diet and I do think that predisposed me to a lot of the gut issues. Not that I necessarily needed coffee, but I didn't have, it was really the fats. I had almost no fat. I was afraid. I was fataphobic and I was 130 pounds. Fat doesn't make you fat. We all know that now.
Good fat, bad fat.
Right. I had no idea. Yeah. I just thought low fat, you know, high protein. I never really looked at sugar though. I was consuming a ton of sugar to fuel my workouts back then. I mean, it was
insane. That's the killer. Yeah. Right? Like we know that now.
Yes. Yeah. By the way, smoking, they've banned flavors, right? But you walk down aisle 8 and you have a child and you have Kellogg's or Frosted Flakes with cartoon characters and they're pushing sugar. I would argue that sugar is probably the most lethal thing we have in our system right now.
Right.
And yet, you know, they're going after tobacco first, where I would argue sugar could potentially be even worse for you then.
Yeah, I think the studies are slowly showing that. So anyway, the two things that really helped me eventually, even with I got diagnosed with C. difficile. C. diff is a deadly bacteria. So I finally, there was a thing to
something.
This is really where I was having all these seeds planted. I'm reading these podcasts. I'm trying a few supplements and things. Nothing's really healing me. I think if I had found those things before, you know, 2 years of medications and stress and all that, maybe we would be different. Once I was on those meds, it was hard to get off of them. C. diff was all of a sudden, I was in the hospital about to get, you know, do a regular Solumedrol pump, maybe a blood infusion, get sent home after 5 days, regular at that point. Every 3 months I was getting something like that just to keep it alive, basically. C. diff is a deadly bacteria that can colonate the gut, usually after antibiotics. So C. diff is caused by antibiotics. The treatment...
Don't a lot of people die at the hospital?
Yeah, it's a nosocomial infection, meaning it gets spread in hospitals very easily. Yeah. So whenever I'd go to the hospital really sick, the first thing they would do is screen me for C. diff.
Huh.
I had never been positive until I actually started getting a little better, and then I had a positive C. diff. And they always did it. It was nice, so I'd get my own room in the hospital. The Army hospital, a lot of times you have 3, 4, however.
That's why actually, when we go now, he gets me my own room. Or my C. diff, probably.
Hey, look at that. But I test positive for C. diff, and all of a sudden it went from, oh, you're going to be in the hospital for a few days, we're going to get this inflammation under control, to here's an antibiotic, go home. I'm like, I still have all the same symptoms. Took the antibiotic, went home, didn't really get any better. So after a month of really feeling bad, I went back to the hospital and they're like, oh, you have ulcerative colitis. I'm like, I know I have ulcerative. They're like, well, you don't have C. diff. And I'm like, I have all the same symptoms. So I realized when you wipe out things in the gut, when you just disseminate the gut, the first things that grow back are usually the weeds, candida, C. diff. So my gut had been so destroyed that as I started healing it again, somewhat theoretical, but C. diff came up and then it came up again shortly after. Now, steroid refractory ulcerative colitis, meaning you're not getting better, you're not inducing remission with
prednisone,
you will now be eligible for fecal transplant after one positive C. diff. So fecal microbiota transplant got on my radar after I had two positive C. diffs that no one could explain, that my symptoms weren't different. Now, usually full C. diff, like real C. diff, is like really watery stools, smells terrible. It's like every doctor that has been around C. diff,
stink smell.
Again, I'm not saying my poop doesn't stink, but it didn't, right? They were all like surprised. Or like,
how did I know at some point you would drive a podcast where this is exactly what we're talking about?
Shit.
It's fucking dinner time right now. I need a minute. Yeah. That was the limit.
Now you do understand what fecal means, right?
Okay.
So we're talking about poo, and now he's going to transplant someone else's poo in his fucking stomach.
It wasn't about not understanding.
Okay.
When we started talking about how bad the smell was, that's where at some point I just had to
talk to your doctor, hospital friends,
don't. I actually don't. Based on this conversation, I don't think that there's any reason to have this conversation. Can we get to the solution?
I am
so tired of the fucking problem.
Okay, right. so
we understand your gut is completely fucked. All right, so that's not the medical way to say it, but give me to the solving the problem.
Okay, so yes, conventional medicine was, steroids didn't induce remission. Let's try biologics. Biologics for many patients work, about 50-50. The interesting thing about the research is as long as you're 1% better, right? So when Entyvio came out, and now it's been on the market for 10 years now or more, they're, you know, 3-5% better than Remicade, generally, for inducing remission in moderate to severe ulcerative colitis. That means that there's 45% or so of patients that didn't respond that it wasn't effective for. I was one of those. So it's not like it wasn't that crazy.
You're not responding to anything.
I wasn't responding to anything. So
you get the fecal transplant.
So no, I actually moved down here to get Entyvio. This is now 3 or 4 years into the journey. And I was ready to give up. So the conventional option at this point was to remove my colon. So the answer was take out the large intestine. At this point, jeez, the treatment, the corticosteroids have done more damage than help. Therefore, the only thing that we can do is remove your colon. Then you won't have ulcerative colitis. I was going to have the entire colon.
Attach your small intestine to your fucking anus.
The goal is to be able to do a J-pouch surgery. They have to be able to spare the rectum. So I don't know how much you want to talk about this, but if you can't spare the rectum, though, they couldn't promise me that. So,
hey, look, the good news is get to the point where you didn't have to do that.
Okay, so I didn't have to do that. So someone, sounds kind of crazy, but someone prayed over me that I'd get fecal transplant. I'd never really heard of it. I briefly heard a podcast.
Praying for him to get one.
Someone prayed over me. I was like, well, I looked it up. The only places they were doing it were Australia. Spain, maybe. And that place was getting attacked. Place in Canada was offering it. Place in England. Tamount Clinic. And I forget the one in Australia. But they were all getting under fire because they knew. I mean, these drugs that I was on were costing. I mean, Entyvio
is $20,000
yeah, infusion, and it used to be more. And the newer ones are probably going to be more than that. I ended up getting a fecal transplant through UC San Francisco. So they had a clinical trial, anyone that's dealing with stuff like this, clinicaltrials.gov, it's always worth just looking. What's the research going on? Clinicaltrials.gov has thousands of research all over the country. You can type in, if you're interested in stem cells, see what are they studying stem cells in China for? You know, they'll be on.
So this is international. So not just what they're doing in the US.
Super interesting. And that's a really fun thing to look at. Okay, you type in ulcerative colitis. What studies are going on in the US?
Global.
What studies
are
going on?
The stem cell idea. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
that's a great topic.
Yeah, so we could look into all that, but it's fun to look at why are we doing this research versus not, right? We're one of two countries in the world that allow direct-to-consumer marketing of pharmaceuticals, mm-hmm, us in New Zealand. And they have, anyway, super interesting. For me, fecal transplant took me from 30 bloody problems a day on, I think I was on 20 milligrams prednisone. Again, I couldn't get below that, to overnight, less than 10 bowel movements, no blood, was able to get off prednisone over the next few months. It was incredible. Now, I'd also met a functional medicine practitioner at my school, Bastyr University. So Institute for Functional Medicine, probably the most legitimate training in functional medicine for any MD, ND, chiropractor, anyone that wants to get like a little more of this framework. I'm really grateful because I had seen an ND, I'd seen some DOs, but no one had really been like, hey, look, your body can heal itself, until this chiropractor who teaches for functional IFM, her daughter had Crohn's. Anyway, she was the first one that sat me down and said, look, your body can heal itself. And I was like, she's like, do you believe that? And I was like, well, it hasn't yet. So how can I don't have a...
On the fence.
Yeah, I'm like, I would love to believe that. It sounds great, but yeah, I haven't experienced that. Why hasn't my body healed itself? You know, I've been trying. I've been doing these different diets. I've done the specific carbohydrate diet. I try all these things. So I believe fecal transplant was the signal to start healing. Getting off all the meds was definitely important. I did a lot of different supplements, Ultra and Flamex. I like Metagenics brand really did help me, I would say. And then that's where peptides came in, because I got healthy enough to get down to about 5 milligrams of prednisone. I just couldn't get off the last little bit. I wish I had understood more what I know about hormones now, the way corticosteroids long-term will affect your DHEA levels, your testosterone levels. But still, no one had ever looked at my hormones at that point, even though my body's ability to heal itself. The gut lining is new every 3 to 6 days. My goodness. So probably mine was closer to the 6 or more days. But someone that's got a great gut, their epithelial lining is probably entirely new every 3 days or so. It's incredible. And don't quote me, I'm not a scientist. I'm a practitioner. I use things that I know are close enough to true that yeah, can help that person get better. For me, I wasn't healing. No matter what, even if I got the best drug on the market and it worked for me, like when Entyvio's worked for you or anyone else, that drug did not heal the gut. The body still healed itself. So no matter what, even the fecal transplant that signaled for healing, that wasn't what healed it. There was still an innate healing response that caused those cells. It just
allowed your body to heal itself.
Right.
Or and so triggered.
Exactly.
Your body. Okay.
So peptides are really, that's where they come in. Peptides,
can you say what, I don't know what a peptide is.
Yeah. So peptide, the classification. So any molecular biologist would be like, well, of course peptides can do things. Peptides are anything 40 amino acids or less, both that exist in the body, any combination. So you could do any little combination of this amino acid, which amino acids are the building block of proteins, right? There's about 7,000 that have been isolated so far in the human body. We don't understand nearly what most of them do. Just like there are, you know, about 100 hormones in the body. We understand what those do, though. We can measure them in the blood. We know generally how many you should have, how many free testosterone molecules you should have in your body, how many molecules of T4, thyroid hormone, you should have in your body. We don't understand who should have what amount of peptides in their body, but we know they're in there in different parts. BPC-157 is one of the best researched and best understood body-protecting complex 157, 15 amino acid longs. We actually, they know it's been isolated in human gastric juice. They believe that is the reason that your stomach doesn't eat itself. Everyone's stomach is so acidic that even physiologists can't really explain why. Why doesn't everyone have burning gastric ulcers that just wrecks their lining?
Because of the acidity that breaks down food.
We need that to break down food. And we need bicarbonate then in the small intestine to buffer it. We understand the buffer system, but we don't understand how the body, how that doesn't break down. So they think BPC is the thing that really protects it. So we can take BPC in a capsule form and actually see it help heal the intestinal lining at a faster rate. And now a lot of people are injecting it because they're seeing it do the same thing at joints. So I've seen it shine in post-surgical patients. If we inject it near it, or at least close, shoulders, it really shines well. And a lot of guys...
Is this one injection?
No, so generally we're going to do it daily. So it's a signal. Peptides are generally signaling molecules, just like a hormone. Hormone's a signaling molecule. It docks onto a receptor and tells the nucleus of the cell generally to release a different transcript of RNA that tells the body to build or do something. Generally, that's what peptides are doing too, just at a different level.
So you could take a peptide and cure a shoulder or improve a shoulder.
Well, yes. So okay. Where peptides shine, I would say, one, they're non-toxic, generally non-invasive, some better injected overall. There's a few that, the big research is on who can make the best peptides orally bioavailable. Can we get them through the stomach lining? Can we get them absorbed systemically?
And right now they're 100% through
a BPC is the only one that I've seen work really well orally. There's a few others, and there's a few companies that are really trying, and I'm excited to kind of be on top of that research. And I would argue there's a lot more companies trying than we realize. So someone came on Rogan recently and talked about there's at least 200 peptides that Merck alone are working on to patent. And that's where it gets...
This is, by the way, why the FDA is banning this shit, because now you have the government.
But they haven't banned it yet. So what is the...
Well, they have. They've classified them as potentially dangerous because they're not going to be considered dangerous. I mean, I honestly, at this point in my clinical practice...
But that's not banning them, right?
No, it's not, but it's threatening... If anything was to go wrong with one peptide from a compounding pharmacy, right? So
there's some over here if you want to shoot it.
There's a compounding pharmacy in the area that got threatened for making peptides the people inspecting. So they make all kinds of meds. They make, different formulations. And the main thing a compounding pharmacy does is personalize your treatment plan. So let's say you have your mom's on a thyroid condition, right? And but she's also gluten intolerant. Standard thyroid medication has gluten in it. That's crazy. There's so many patients with thyroid conditions that have gluten intolerance. But anyway, you can compound a thyroid medication that doesn't have gluten in it.
So this is so fascinating in so many different ways. So you would go, or you went. Yeah. I'm so curious about this. But you would go do your blood work, and then you would go through almost like a Q&A of what's ailing you. And then you're going to create a potion of peptides based on this?
So that's probably what I should do in my business model. But thank you for laying out. So that's what like 10X Health and a lot of these, I wouldn't call them cookie cutter, but they're providing really good care, I think, personalized medicine. That's what Peter Attia's clinic, for example, like very high end. I think it's thousands and thousands of dollars to start. I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. But most of these models are very expensive because they're truly personalized. Right now, I'm incorporating peptides into what it was primary care at the Center for Health and Wellbeing. So I was doing primary care. You come in for a standard checkup with a doctor. I follow up with you and review all your labs and kind of go through your health goals. And I saw peptides start shining in patients with rheumatoid arthritis and any gut issues, but this definitely
is a direct assault on pharmacology, on the pharmaceutical business.
Well, so yeah, I mean, case study here, right? I cost the government. If I was in the hospital every 3 to 4 months, or 4 times a year when I was in the military, I was on Entyvio. I mean, we're talking $200,000-$500,000 probably minimum for my health. Thankfully, I had military insurance. It helped cover it. I get off all that. I was paying nothing for my health at the time. I mean, I might have bought a few supplements here and there, but I got off all that, and I spent probably a few $1,000s on my health in the first few years, which isn't a lot. Some people spend way more. I wish I had probably invested even more. But, a bottle of, let's say, BPC-157 right now, about $150 for a 2-month supply. So it's expensive. It's not cheap.
So forgive me. This is, you said BP-157.
Body protecting complex 157. It's probably
One amino acid.
It's kind of like the gateway.
One peptide that's a collective of amino acids.
Okay, which has been shown to have healing improvement in...
I can attest to it.
in a variety of different
symptoms. Most of them were animal studies. So that's the challenge. That's why if you went... Sorry, if you were talking to a medical doctor...
Because I read the Tony Robbins book. I read the Peter Attia book. And a lot of them do talk about peptides. Are these kind of standard ones that have been researched and tested?
Yeah, but there's not a lot of human data. But there's practitioners like me and Peter Attia that have used... I would argue I've used more peptides than most practitioners. There's a few great practitioners in the area. The problem is I don't advertise that I do peptide therapy. In fact, my clinic has asked me to stop, and we'll see if I do or not. I'm going to still do it through my private practice It's not because they're dangerous. It's not because they're illegal. It's because they've been classified as potentially dangerous. They went from overnight. They were normal. They were unregulated basically, which isn't good either. I'm not pushing for no regulation. I'm pushing for that practitioners can use what is best and that we can source them properly.
Well, also, too, I think to your point, we're looking for real data that is not influenced. Like, medicine can't be influenced by
a dollar,
by money, because then it's not true medicine. Medicine should be nonprofit and to some level, right?
Right. And my goal eventually would be that peptides. And
for some of the research and then certainly for the regulation.
Yeah, the regulation needs to be that way. So there's definitely a pharmaceutical interest. I mean, the minute that semaglutide, which is it's the peptide that now Ozempic is. Ozempic did not patent semaglutide. Semaglutide is the weight loss drug that everyone wants to talk about. There's a need for it. It helps type 2 diabetics get out of, it actually improves.
Cuts your sugar.
Yeah, it cuts your glucose, but basically it's an agonist. What I really like about most peptides, if I want to just kind of generalize.
I actually do have high glucose. It's one of the my biomarkers that it's always ran a little bit high.
Huh.
For a couple of different reasons, but there are peptides that can reduce some of that sugar and
potentially. So I don't, again, semaglutide is probably my least favorite of the therapeutic 40-ish peptides that I've used. It still is great, though. It's a GLP-1 agonist. You don't need to know all this, but anything that's an agonist, less than 2% of the pharmaceuticals on the market, from my understanding, are agonists, meaning they support a pathway in the body. Almost everything is an antagonist.
Oh, I see.
A beta blocker, right? Okay. A statin that blocks HMG-CoA reductase, right? So almost everything we do are turning off pathways. This works
with your body.
Yeah, so almost everything in the peptide world are actually stimulating pathways. And I do believe in the next 10 years, and maybe I'm wrong about this, that even something like testosterone, we'll find peptides that can stimulate the receptor where we can actually take you from, 300, 400, 500 to 1,000 to 1,200, wherever we're aiming for the total to be free around 2025, ideally without, right now we have to replace it, right? Testosterone replacement can be a great tool. It can be very helpful, but it's not your levels of 400 plus 600. Right. It is 1,000 is what we're giving you.
So let me ask you a question just from the sheer numbers of it. You said that there are 40 that are pretty popular right now and have been researched.
Yeah.
There's an additional 200 that there's a lot of research that are going on right now that
we don't know
about,
but
at least in the general, but there's 7,000 total.
Yeah.
So we're just scratching the surface.
There might be more than that. There's at least.
Well, and you wonder, I hate to, you wonder what the role of AI is going to play in this.
That's a different subject, but hold on, sticking on peptides. It's certainly something we can cover, but peptides, are they just saying it's almost like Bitcoin 10 years ago. It's something where it's like, we don't want to let this cat out of the bag, and there could be some more natural things.
Well, think why. Health industry is making millions of dollars on us being sick.
That's just wild. So
Now they're making great money on Ozempic, right?
Are you? Yeah.
So if they can do that with every peptide.
Are you concerned from a business standpoint on the peptide? Is that something that you consider or think about?
Would it be awesome if I could write a prescription, you just tore, your rotator cuff, you tore part of your labrum. If I could write a prescription, you could go to CVS and pick up an auto injector of BPC-157, or it would be called something else, right?
Yeah.
What they might be able to patent is the delivery mechanism and the dosing plan. That's what Ozempic did. They didn't, as far as we know.
It wasn't the actual molecular structure that they patented.
Right.
It was the distribution of the actual medicine.
But that's why Ozempic has, there's like three or four of them. Ozempic's just the most popular, right?
It's because of the mechanism.
Yeah, because none of them, and Wegovy is a higher dose that's now been FDA approved for weight loss. There's now tirzepatide, which is a GIP and a GLP. Super interesting stuff. Yeah. I would love to understand all that's happening at the pharmaceutical.
But these are antagonists? That's an antagonist?
No, that is an agonist. So that is, it's funny, it causes you to vomit and like have crazy bowel, like it can cause a bunch of GI issues and has a, of the peptides, semaglutide has probably the most side effects, like superficially, but internally it's very safe. It's one of the safest mechanisms, I would say, of things out there that we're using medically.
Peptides have been shown for this idea of longevity and increasing the cellular structure to have a longer active health life, right? Like longevity and health life are the number can be different, right? But what are your, maybe what's your strategy around that? Is it different for treating a rotator cuff as it is to say somebody who's like, hey, I'm 44. I don't have kids. I want to have kids later in life. So I want to make sure that I'm going to live or have the ability to move when I'm 85.
Well, that's where peptides do come in, because there are what brings most people into, let's say, a men's health clinic now, and they get started on testosterone, which I help a lot of people, and I think it's a great tool, but they still want to have kids. Let's say they're 44. They might have low testosterone, but it may not be the right time to use testosterone. Now I'm actually helping a lot of people get on and off properly. Because I think that's unfortunate. The business side would say, hey, come do testosterone, which is great, but it does need to be monitored. We should do your blood work at least every 3 months. And you know what? Your fertility is going to be lower while you're on it. You could have these side effects. Peptides don't really have a lot of that. I was able to prescribe it without doing any blood work really for most of the peptides. If I look back, I could do that. I choose to always do a blood panel first. I would try to be as safe as possible. Mm-hmm. But there are peptides that raise growth hormone. This is where probably the most
CJC-12.
CJC-1295. Yeah, so they raise IGF-1. So you can run your insulin-like growth factor 1 and get a feel for roughly how much growth hormone you're making at night. Growth hormone, fountain of youth, like there's so much you could get into there. And then even among the growth hormone
peptides.
So the peptides,
IGF is called a fountain of youth? So if that runs a little high, it's okay?
Growth hormone itself, I mean, is like, because I mean, you can inject actual GH, right? It's thousands of dollars a month. It's very expensive. There's some ways to get it a little cheaper and still pharmaceutical grade. But, growth hormone itself, just like testosterone, it's going to, if you inject it at night, you'll actually get less of your own production. So even the best bodybuilders are actually doing growth hormone in the morning or around workout time, and then they're doing a secretagogue growth hormone peptide at night, generally to get their own body's double effect. So low doses. So because anytime you dose a hormone high, side effects can be pretty high.
But
so.
Go ahead.
I was just curious on the peptide thing again. Is like, so someone comes in, you go through the blood work, they go through their symptoms or their lifestyle, what they want to improve. You're talking to them, you're having the conversation. Then you're going to prescribe peptides. Where are you getting them? If these are
So a few pharmacies. So the main way, some pharmacies have basically created side businesses that are labs now. They're lab companies, similar to stem cells, actually. Some of the stem cell companies in the country are now creating peptide labs where stem cell labs were actually held to a very high standard, even though it's hard to, I don't really understand stem cells that well. I know that's really, most people that are doing peptides did stem cells. So that's really most of the anti-aging doctors, the longevity docs are the ones doing that. I got into peptides because they helped me. So there are ways now you can get BPC-157 almost anywhere online.
Okay.
It's still $150. So it's still expensive. So
but you got to be careful with stuff like that, right? Because if you lab test some of these pharmaceutical companies, you're going to see heavy metals in the product, right? So you got to be careful about
that. You got to be very careful because a lot of these things get sold on research purposes only sites.
Supplements are non-regulated?
So they're not regulated in the sense that there's different regulations. They're not FDA. There's not monographs for every supplement. That would be great if there was. I mean, honestly, but what happens is then you start seeing things like, well, NAC, N-acetylcysteine, all of a sudden, there were some people that were taking it with purported benefits with COVID. All of a sudden it got threatened that I wouldn't be able to prescribe it, but you could still get it at Sprouts. I couldn't use the injectable anymore, which I would use in inhaled. You could inhale it to actually clear some mucus and actually help glutathione, for example, heal the lining of the gut. You can buy glutathione online, but I wouldn't be able to prescribe it in a compounded pharmaceutical way.
When someone comes in and they run through your process, do you ever say, hey, I can't really prescribe this, but go ahead and get it here?
So the way I'm approaching it now, maybe in 3 months I'll be like, why was I being so worried about this? I provide research and I provide education on peptides. And then I do view first doing no harm as sourcing, providing the potential best way they can source it. Because if I don't, and this is where I would argue this all day if I was ever to get sued for something, that if someone says I'm going to do peptides, my job as a doctor at that point, as a licensed practitioner, is to reduce their harm, as much as I can. That could mean, if I thought they were harmful, talking them out of it, right? That's one way that I could approach that. Like if I see people on multiple anabolic steroids in my clinic, I will tell them and I will show them in their labs what it's doing to their body.
Look how thick your blood is.
Yeah. I'll go through the benefits and risks and what I understand.
But are peptides similar to stem cell in that there are absolute, like nobody's gotten an injection of stem cell and died.
Right.
Right. Like healthy stem.
There's been no safety concerns on any peptide.
Peptides are similar. So
this whole potentially dangerous is just a potential, again, no conspiracy theory, whatever. Most likely is that they're waiting to patent them. They're doing their best to patent the ones that they're going to work. and all the other ones that are close enough. Because right, once the FDA has a something that says this treats shoulder pain more than anything, shoulder osteoarthritis, then that will get covered and nothing else will. Until you prove something, then the standard of evidence has to be one step above that. Even if it's non-toxic, non-invasive, until you get above that, you won't get approved.
What do you think the percentage of people that are on peptides?
I think it's a lot higher than you think. I think
really,
pro athletes, it's you can't really test for it. I work with again a lot of guys in different levels of military training. I think almost everyone that's looking for an edge is taking.
Are you almost 100%?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where we'll see. Now, my understanding, people have been caught with peptides, not on peptides.
There's no litmus for.
So this is almost. I mean, just for us, it is almost like a cheat code.
Potentially, yeah. And I think you should still be careful. I think it's like there are 40 different ones even that I think you could go look up right now if you just look up peptide therapy. And there's probably ways you could get, like, take a quiz and figure out which one's best for you. And that's probably what I should develop, you know? Mm. Because peptides I'm passionate about, right? If people get them from someone else or get them from another source, like right now I'm doing well because I'm providing research, I'm helping people. And the way we make money in my clinic mostly is by managing hormones, because you need to do blood work, you know, pretty often. You need to be on a monthly membership. You do. It is a fairly expensive prescription. Mm-hmm. Peptides, you know, they heal people and they go home and they feel better. So,
you know, the one thing that I always come friends. Back to with all of this health stuff, and at some point we'll kind of tie it, but it really goes down to this evolution of energy and that your health can be the foundation to do whatever the hell you want in your life. Right. Right. This whole podcast was around tips and tricks and, you know, cuts and hacks and, you know, the foundational pieces, the rebounding from this. And there's all kinds of different things with, you know, how people kind of want to hack their way or take a pill or do this and that. But the health part of it and being energetic and the, you know, the combination of workout, nutrition, sleep, you know, testing, staying outside in the light. There's just a lot of different things that you can do, but a lot of it is just tweaking your own algorithm and what works for you to be the most and to show up, right? To show up in your best self, to be alert, to be energetic, and then to be able to you know, downshift and be able to turn it off at night, right? You want to turn it up in the morning or turn it up during the middle of the day and then downshift so you can sleep and hopefully process a 24-hour period and do it again the next day and then over and over and over. Right. And so what you're talking about is a lot of that. And I'm sure that's a lot of the questioning and stuff like that.
Yeah. And that's that's where my mind as a human performance, you know, undergrad comes in, because I'm not looking at, are you sick or are you not sick? I'm looking at, are you optimal?
Yeah.
So that's where it gets really fun, because there's not a one size fits all. And, you know, I love neurotropics. I love talking about kind of how we enhance the brain. Some of those are peptides, some of them aren't, but, you know, a lot of people come to me now because peptides are the hot thing. And I think that's going to keep being, I don't think peptides are leaving. I don't think this is like a
trend.
We might call them something else in the future, but small molecules that are more specific than what we're currently using therapeutically, that are more safe, those are going to be around.
It sounds like the pivotal issue or the crux of what we're talking about when it comes to peptides is that proteins are critical to our health.
Yes.
The subset of proteins are able to build the protein, which are amino acids.
Yes.
That's where our health is going.
Yeah. And knowing what you specifically will need more than someone else potentially. So like, I would love to be on the cutting edge of developing the testing that says, hey, based on this algorithm, you would be a great candidate for BPC. Because other people that I work with, some of the guys going through SEAL training that I've gotten to help or whatever, they're testing a lot more there now, which is interesting. There's a death in the SEAL community, training community, and February 2022, was it? January, February. So they've been a lot more strict. I think it's a good thing.
Death,
I think
for what reason?
Not supposed to talk about it. Okay. But no, it's actually there's a New York Times full autopsy report. It was performance enhancing drugs was the listed cause of his death. And, you know, he was, as far as we know, on massive doses of growth hormone, testosterone, potentially some other anabolics. Peptides weren't blamed in it. We're just saying now there's Olympic level testing going on, which is actually a good thing. I think that, you know what, I don't think even a Navy SEAL would rather, if he could get through without, when a guy comes to me and he's like, what can I do? If he hasn't been injured yet, he hasn't tried without being on anything, I'll say, go try. If you get injured, then Buds Medical is the SEAL, like the medical care they get when they're rolled before they're SEALs. So these guys aren't SEALs yet. They're in training. They may not, 90% of them won't make it. I think they should all go through and give it their best shot, especially when they're 20 years old. The guys going through that are 30.
How often can you take it? Every year?
Go through buds?
Yeah.
No, it's something you actually get a contract for, and if you don't make it, you go out to the fleet, and you might be able to come back about 2 years later.
2 years, okay.
So, yeah, a really interesting pathway. But for them, what I like about peptides is that I have objective data, right? So when someone, like surgery, I think it shines post-surgery, right? Because otherwise, it's like, do my knees feel a little better? Is this after a surgery, you know it should take this long to recover from this shoulder reconstruction, right? And I have patients coming in almost weekly now, almost daily, it seems like, and being like, I went back, it's been 6 weeks. My surgeon cleared me for everything. They said within a month
I'll be... If you think Aaron Rodgers...
Sorry, 6 weeks in comparison to...
to 3 months, let's say. Yeah, I'm seeing about...
So you cut it in half.
And we did... I'm pretty sure we did both BPC and TB4, the Wolverine healing stack that Conor McGregor may or may not have used. Like, those kind of... Like, it's really interesting what the news comes in and then how many people show up at my door to get treatment. Yeah. And then... And so now that's happening like crazy and my... You know, conventional, and I'm saying hormone clinic, it's like a normal thing. There are a lot more, right? There's just in our area, there's probably, you could look up probably 20 HRT clinics within 5 miles of here.
Yeah.
And they're all helping people. And a lot of them are dabbling in peptides. That's how I would say it.
This is like new, right? Because you can't.
But I've been doing it for 6 or 7 years. Yeah, you know? No, so it's like an interesting, it's really interesting. But it's really hitting the mainstream. And, you know, now it's like pretty clear what guys like Aaron Rodgers, like no one's guessing him. He did a lot of things.
It's clear that Aaron Rodgers, his healing process was.
He probably did a lot of other cool, really cool stuff that's probably
hyperbaric,
awesome.
Hyperbaric, ozone, all that shit.
Yeah, there's a whole other.
Can you touch on some of that before we wrap on other things? So
Because
there's cold plunge, there's, you know, different nutrition. Yeah. Tips that you would say
they can all be done synergistically. That's the nice thing. Almost very few things. There's a few of like the neurotropics I use that can't be taken with antidepressants. There's certainly always like medical, like I probably undervalue how many like things happen in my mind when someone shares their goals with me. Like if this, then this, you know, like, it definitely is more because I do screenings at this place where they do therapeutic juicing and fasting called Optimum Health Institute. All those patients are really sick and I have to basically decide, can they do colon hydrotherapy? Kind of a random job I just do for 2 hours on Monday. It's a really cool place. I get to treat really sick people that might be like, they've been told there's nothing else they can do. I would love to incorporate peptides. They just want me to screen these patients, but some of them are on 20 meds, blood thinners, this.
That's got to hit home to you, right?
And like I have to decide,
that have been told, hey, nothing can be done.
And there's some objective things that would disqualify them, but generally the thing I'm doing is, are they healthy? Are they vital enough to receive colon hydrotherapy, which is an interesting thing too, and will it help them? And
colon hydrotherapy,
water in your ass, washing your ass,
like a bidet.
Yeah, but like like higher pressure and like
there's a bigger fist.
I've had enough asshole talk for one podcast. Yeah. Okay, so get your colon washed.
Yeah, maybe.
What would be your top? What about the top like easy things to do if you're even at the gym? Is it sauna? Is it cold plunge?
Yeah.
What would you like? How would you rate it?
I love sauna and cold. I love sauna myself. Cold plunge. There's so many good benefits. And I like the back and forth. Right. So like I know. You're basically giving an exercise to your blood vessels without all the wear and tear that can come with some, you know, types of exercise. So you're getting in Germany, for example, they do cold, hot, right. You can do it in the shower, right? You can just you always want to start with warm, end with cold. Hmm. So you always want to end with cold. That's a German hydrotherapy thing, but you want to allow your body to heal itself back up.
Yeah.
We're always tempted to go back to the warm, but you should always end in cold. Just the simple.
And it was on Huberman where it's 60 minutes sauna and 11 minutes cold a week is ideal.
That's a lot, but yeah, it's definitely doable. I mean, we're talking about cold ideally, but I think jump in the ocean, right? Jump in the ocean, get your feet on the sand. Grounding is very important. Mm. I think
you should be doing that daily or as much as you possibly can.
Yeah,
what's your revolutions just there? Because a lot of people don't know is where you just no shoes, no socks on the earth's surface. Yeah,
get on the earth. I mean,
does that include like asphalt or is it just like grass or is it dirt?
Ideally, sand? the more variety, the better for your energy, for your microbiome, for your electrodes, whatever. But yeah, grass is great. But it would just be fun for, you know, even your listeners to take a moment. Like it'd be fun to poll them, right? Like how many people like honestly are getting their feet on the ground honestly once a week?
Yeah.
Once a day would be ideal. You literally can't ground through you know, all the rubbers and plastics and things like, and I have days where I don't and I'm like, wow.
It is fascinating when you really reflect on that.
Just think about it right now. When was the last time that you were actually had your bare feet on the earth?
When was the last time you got unfiltered sun? Unfiltered sun includes, you know, no sunscreen, no windows. Like you actually got out and just had 15 minutes of unfiltered sun in the morning, ideally when, you know, so ideally like morning sun, cold exposure. Yes. You know, surfers do a pretty good job. Like a lot of surfers, you know, they have weird injuries and stuff. They come see me cause I got hit with a board or whatever, but a lot of them are pretty healthy, you know, and they're pretty resilient. So,
so you don't have, thank you for that. And we got to wrap this up pretty soon. thank you for being here.
But you keep going.
Yeah, I know we keep going forever, but is there a, so 50 degrees, 60 degrees, where do you start defining as cold? I mean, definitely I know like, we do that 39 degree plunge, obviously.
Yeah, I'd have to look. I mean, this is what is fun. Like, Andrew Huberman really changed the dynamics of what, because he's able to really succinctly share, like, the literature. Again, being results-based, I'm going to learn about the literature. That's, like, fun for me to look at.
Yeah.
But, and that's why people say their doctor hasn't learned anything in 5 years. So well, my job is, I'm a lifelong learner, and I think because of my own health journey, I've taken that on. And I hope most practitioners are growing and evolving. I think my job more so demands that. And I actually say that to my patients almost every day to remind myself, right? Like my, one of my jobs for all my, my members, my clients, all that is to be able to sift through what's going on in the podcast world, what's going on in the PubMed, you know, literature world, what's going on in the clinicaltrials.gov world, because I can help synthesize all that. And you know what? Like the next thing, there's something called bioregulators. I have no idea. I have athletes over in like Europe doing, telling me about bioregulators with ozone injections. And I've, I have no idea what bioregulators are yet, but
we did some of those.
But I think it's to your point, and one of the things that we talked about early, and I just want to reiterate it, is that people, there's so much information that's available that they start to do, you know, if they have things and want to be proactive, if they want to be more progressive with their health, they want more energy, there's a lot of literature that's out there that they can start. So then when they come in and they see someone like you, they're having more advanced conversations. They should also be trying stuff. You know, they should be an active participant in their health, not this reactive. I think it's a, like a big part of the problem. And like even like work wise, like we're trying to, I'm trying to grow a team that is like more alert. I talked the other day, not to sidetrack, but he needed time away from the 10 hours of his calendar. So I said, you need 2 hours, go sit on the beach, no shoes, literally just go walk on the beach and you have think time. He said, I have never had a manager tell me stop working. Well, in all honesty, if you just go, if you go 10 hours and 10 hours and 10 hours, and then when you go home, you've got three kids and you've got a wife and you've got this and that, that's just too much. Take 2 hours tomorrow and go get on the sand and go clear your head, because then you can be more organized into what you're doing.
And more effective on what, on contributing.
There's just a ton of things with it.
And then there's times to push through, right? There, and I can help people do that too.
There's a balance, correct.
So you might say, hey, I have this goal. So that's why it all comes back to your goals. So I think getting clear on your goals, you know, and hopefully that's also in line with like a 10-year plan and a, you know, you know, we don't have to, we can't take tomorrow for granted. Like I, you know, for me, it's definitely like more of like, where am I being called? What am I, what's my purpose? And then I have a quote that kind of has always resounded with me. It says, if you know your why, the how and the what will become clear. And I sense that when people come in and they generally understand their why, I can help them try to figure that out in our visit. But if they come in with that, it's a lot more fun because you know, they know why they're there. They know what they want to feel. They might be some self-awareness things they don't have yet, but when I get to dial it in, but I mean, I have what I've been doing now, cause I don't get to see everyone as patients. I do like 15 minute discovery calls that I was doing for free. I charged $30 that way. And I'll give someone the down and dirty in those 15 minutes, you know, just, hey, listen to their story quickly. It's not a full visit, but I will tell them if I think I can help them. If I can't, I know other places to start. Hey, check out this podcast because that's where you're at. That's, you don't have the
start.
So you might not have the knowledge. Come to me, docere, doctor, as teacher. I'd love to educate and share what I'm learning, but that's available. So I want someone to come in and say, I learned about this, this, and this. Can you help me?
Yeah.
You know, which one's the best? I want to help you prioritize because really that's not your job. There's so much, there's 101 health benefits of these, you know, 100 supplements.
Yeah.
How do I decide which ones to take for my physiology, symptom wise, under the hood, long-term health? That's what I help people prioritize. I would much rather someone come in. That's the opposite of your old doctors, not point at you, but just saying
no, I understand.
The sense of like, they're like, oh, I'm the doctor, you're the patient, I'll tell you what to do. I want patients come in saying, I want to do this, can you help me?
Yeah, well, thank you for your service. Can you tell everybody who's going to listen to this where they can can find you.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. So I'm, I think dr.trainer, last name Trainor.
We can put British that on, the,
but,
on the
screen. Yeah. Link it up.
Yeah. That's my Instagram. I'm pretty, contacting there, but my best thing is, my website, www.drtrainernd.com. Probably need to simplify it for the business stuff, but, you know, I have some reviews here in San Diego. We'd be happy to, there's an appointments tab. Like I said, that 15-minute call is probably the best way to just get started. Because there, it might make sense to go more to the places I offer blood work. It might make sense to just schedule with me if you're out of, and I
can do
blood
work. It's a great place to start.
It's a great place to start because like we did, we just connected. Yeah. You know, within 5-10 minutes, we were able to say, hey, this is where I would go.
Yeah.
And you already had some goals. You had objective things you wanted to do. Yeah. And I've helped empower you to do that in a, you know, a lot of places that if you came in with your same goals, you honestly might have spent $5,000 before you even get some treatment, to be honest, in the way that...
I don't think he would have spent that, but yeah.
Hopefully not.
I would have asked you for some your credit card.
Yeah, because this stuff can get expensive, and I'm not trying to devalue the value of it, but there's places charging, you know, potentially 4 times more than peptides for me, and that's just because I know that, like, helping people will always come back to be worth it. And there is a volume thing and all that.
Well, we say, like my father used to say, may we all continue the healing. And I think that's the pivotal point. And, I mean, that's where we are today. And I just want to thank you for taking the time right now.
Yeah.
We can go on for hours, but we need to let these guys go home and eat some peptides.
And now people know me, and maybe we can do a Q&A or come in with, today I didn't answer a lot of questions. I feel like because we were trying to figure out, you know, my story versus, it's what a blend. To share, but I love sharing them both because I'll try pretty much anything. Like I said, I'm an astronaut. Like I'm getting some hydrogen bottles in because I heard about it on a peptide or on a podcast. Like, is hydrogen water going to help me absorb my nutrients better and feel better? I don't know.
Yeah.
So why don't I try it? And then 2 months from now, I can let you know if it's helped. Me and my wife are going to try it and my barber, you know? So I get a few other people that are friends, and that's how it started with peptides. I started doing it with some friends after I was like, this helped me a lot. This helped you. So peptides, the only thing I do now, I'm off all meds. Because they're helping me, they have side benefits, right?
Yeah.
So instead of side effects of these other meds that were breaking down my bones and other stuff, actually like, I feel better in the gym. I have a little more vascularity. Yeah. Most people say BPC is a slight neurotropic effect. So I take it in the morning. Some people take it at night. Like, it's just really cool to get into the nuances. That's the fun part when people are like, you know, I'm
what
taking
what I love this. Is the empirical, the fact that it's like, it's working. Like, yeah. There's a noticeable results. Difference. And I thank you for that. And I honestly, we have to wrap it up.
Yes.
We'll go on forever, but thank you very, very much for being here. It was amazing. And by the way, this is what we try to do in terms of a blend of your journey with trying to glean some things and be able to share with our audience just how elite people can function. So I think what we did is a perfect blend of how we like to get to know you. We also like to get to know what you do and then try to contribute and help everybody get better. Just even 1%, right?
So I do offer on Fridays, actually, it's private practice day. So I work other places kind of Monday through Thursday, but Friday, all I do is those 30-minute consults.
There you go. You can win on Fridays. You can
I was thinking about that. I was like, wait, that's the day I offer those. Yeah. That's like the main day I offer those initial calls. And if someone wants to pay me and do a full hour right away, hey, I do that too. And if someone's like, and that's, you know, the average going rate for that is $300 to $400 now. That's about what I charge. But that's like me spending usually about 3 to 4 hours of my time working with you dial in a plan. So there's that, but there's also the, hey, 15-minute call, $30.
Get started.
Let's get started.
That's awesome.
Perfect.
Well, thanks again.
Awesome. Really, thank you very much.
That was very helpful.
This wraps it up. It's another great session of Flip Your Friday. Casey, I didn't know you know this, if you knew this, but we're actually on every platform. It's really cool. So Spotify, we're on Instagram, we're on all that stuff. There's people out there. I have no idea what that means, really. YouTube and all that, but there's people out there. Audience can learn. Yeah. It's cool. We're on there. So thank you very much again, and that'll wrap it up. And that's it.
That's awesome.